I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to what is a Friday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all the great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 375, the free Odyssey app, and of course, streaming live on YouTube. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476 is the number that you could jump on in with us. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. We got a whole lot to do today. Coming up in 40 minutes from now, we'll be joined by Bobby Regan from Barstool Sports. His great job on their college basketball coverage. And then we will do a little prospect profile. It's funny how these things work. So we go, all right, for prospect profile, we know that we eventually have to hit Colorado with Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter. So earlier in the week, I said to Samter, Friday would be a good day to do a Colorado guest. And he reached out to our buddy Ryan Konigsberg, who's going to join us coming up at 4:20 p.m. Eastern, 1:20 p.m. Pacific time. And right as we're sitting here getting ready for the show, we find out that friend of show, my guy, your guy, our guy. Now I sound like Adam Shine. Yuck. And I like Adam Shine, but when he does the my guy, your guy, our guy, you know, everyone's Adam Shine's guy. But Coach Prime got a 5-year, $54 million contract extension. So congratulations to him. So not only will we talk Shedeur Sanders, not only will we talk Travis Hunter, but we will also talk about the extension that Coach Prime did receive today. We got a whole lot to do. I'll get to just the choke job by Arkansas last night. But I woke up today, ended up going to the gym, you know, did a little elliptical, lift some weights as well. And I was very hungry today, extremely hungry today. But I did not have lunch, and I didn't even get my habitual cold brew that I get each and every day. And I placed an order at 11:30 for a 1:50 pickup, right? Like, usually I like to eat like around like 12 o'clock. But I placed for a 1:50 pickup from La Industry Pizza, which is 3 to 5 blocks away from our New York City studios. So I got us and the staff some pies today. We got a burrata pie. We got burrata, pepperoni, and sausage. And then my favorite pie from there, which I don't think I would get at any other pizza place, and I was told specifically at this place that you have to get it, is the bacon fig jam slice. Now, it's one thing for me to say the pizza's good, right? I like it. I ordered it. I did eat a lot of it before the show, which, by the way, there's going to have to be a bathroom break at some point during the show. And also by 6 p.m. Eastern time, if I'm still, I'm sitting down, but if I'm still standing, you get the point, and I'm still up and alert because I'm in a food coma right now. I had a lot of pizza before the show because I was really, really hungry because I didn't eat anything else before today. Now, I'll give credit. Samter, your stomach is an impressive stomach, because when I walked in here, what were you eating? You had like on, it looked like a piece of white bread. Were those like chicken meatballs?
So I thought I was being thrifty. I got frozen meatballs from Trader Joe's.
Okay.
Like a year ago.
Oy.
Maybe like 8 months ago. And we just never ate them because we're like, oh, how good can frozen meatballs from Trader Joe's be?
There's always something in the freezer that you have. That just stays in the freezer, and you're just looking at it. It's staring at you, and it's yelling at you like, when are you going to eat me? And then eventually, I just think there is a time where you just got to throw that stuff out. So you had 8-month-old frozen meatballs on a piece of what was that, white bread?
It was a sourdough bread. I put the meatballs on with some pizza sauce on top of it. It was kind of like a mini meatball sub.
Okay. So you had that, and then I brought in pizza. What did you think of the pizza, by the way?
It's very good. It's very good. It's up there in my top 5, top 8.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
I'd have to have it. We were talking about doing this, getting a few different places.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of blocking out which place they're from and having a blind taste test.
So I will be working in the summer. I do have a lot of vacation, though, that I do take in the summer. that seems like the perfect summer radio bit. We're on like a hot Thursday. We go get some pies. What do we hit? Like John's on Bleecker Street, La Industry. And you got to hit like one more.
Joe's.
All right, Joe's.
Because yeah. Joe's for me is my personal favorite.
Can I be honest?
See, here's where it comes in. You're going to start degrading my guy.
I think Joe's is just a little teeny bit overrated. I do. When I go to Joe's, it's good drunk pizza. Now, it's better than drunk pizza, don't get me wrong. But it's open late. If I'm normal hours going to get pizza, Joe's is not the top of the line for me. And I know that's a very controversial opinion. So, all right, I'm down to do that in the summer. We could push that off to the back burner. You know, we could put it in the back of the oven, and then we'll bring it to the front for the, you know, for a summer topic idea. I think that's good. Like, we blindfold, and we bring people in here randomly, like, once per segment. We have three different pies. All right, you got to take a bite out of each slice. And then if we don't like them, we'll, like, cover it in hot sauce or something, or soy sauce.
Ooh. Do you have Shep's number? I'm going to give him a call right now.
No, we wouldn't do that to Shep. No. Absolutely.
I will say that the fig and bacon that you were talking about was delicious.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Very good. Even Marash and Tiki were loving it. You know, Marash is watching his weight, is watching his figure right now, which if you listen to this network, that's something that you never thought we would ever be saying. And Marash goes, "You're killing me. You got this pizza, and now I have to eat this pizza." I'm like, "Well, you don't have to." He goes, "Yeah, but Tommy's making me," the other producer there, "Tommy's making me get him a slice of pizza, so now, of course, I'm going to get the pizza as well." So, you know, little treat, little sweet treat for a Sweet 16 Friday right here on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Yesterday kind of went how I expected. I thought Alabama, BYU, Florida, Maryland would be high scoring. I thought Duke would be high scoring as well. I like Duke, Florida, and Alabama all to win. I made a bet right before the game, you know, a good-sized wager on Alabama laying the points, and I felt very good about that one, and they ended up laying the 4.5 points and covering 113-88. I saw a great stat. If you only kept the three-point shots that Alabama made last night, which was 25, the most in NCAA tournament history, and their free throws, which are 18 free throws, and you took away all their two-pointers, they still would have beat BYU. So now this sets up a tremendous matchup. Alabama up against Duke, which feels like a Final Four game, but it's going to be played in the Elite Eight. And the winner of that will go to the Final Four, and those two high-octane offenses are going to be fun to watch. And how great was Cooper Flagg last night? And Caleb Love was sensational with the 35 points, but Cooper Flagg, 30 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists. Remember, is he going to be healthy heading into the NCAA tournament from what happened during the ACC tournament, which is a fair thought. Very quickly, that thought did evaporate when he just threw down a dunk in the first round up against a poor 16 seed and then stuck out his tongue. And it's like, all right, Cooper Flagg is back. So Bama rolls BYU 113-88. Duke survives up against Arizona 100-93. And what was probably Kevin Willard's last game at Maryland, Florida clearly was the better team. They won 87-71. But the best game was Texas Tech and Arkansas. And if you listen to this show, right, I tell you when I'm right, I tell you when I'm wrong. No, I'm not a hypocrite like some others do claim. But I was confident that Arkansas was going to win the game. I said, plus the points with Arkansas. Also, you may as well just take them on the money line. Because I was very, very bullish on the coaching job up until this point last night that John Calipari did. So two things can be true. Statement one, John Calipari did a remarkable job this year at Arkansas. It is unbelievable that in their first year on the job, he got that program to where how they look for most of the season to the Sweet 16. But then the next statement, he choked that game away and it leaves a sour taste in your mouth, is also true. They're up 16 with 9:29 to play. They're up 13 with 4:22 to play. You got to win that game. And I know people will tell me, oh, but Zach, basketball is a game of runs. Sure. That was a choke job last night by Arkansas. They should be playing on Saturday night. They should be playing tomorrow night. And they squandered away a golden opportunity to basically say bleep you to so many people that doubted John Calipari in Arkansas this year. And I love Cal. But the last few years in the NCAA tournament, He's been a disaster. And this was really ugly last night. Now, it doesn't ruin the season, but you walk away from this season saying, man, we should have been in the Elite Eight. And oh, when Calipari gets back there, will anything else be different? Because as great as John Calipari has been, right? UMass Final Four, Memphis National Championship game. You look at Kentucky, won a national championship, and all the recruits that he's been able to bring in and every stop that he goes and he's in the Hall of Fame. We all know what the legacy, we all know what the resume is of John Calipari. But he's only won one championship. For the talent that he's had, you would think he would already have more than one championship. And that's why Kentucky didn't want him anymore. And that's why he saw the writing on the wall and he left Kentucky. And I'm not saying he had to win a national championship this year. If they just would have lost last night and it wasn't in just humiliating fashion when you had a 16-point lead and you blew it and you just got beat by Texas Tech, all right, no harm, no foul, round of applause, sensational season. But how you lose last night and you choked that game away and you gagged that game away, oh, it was tough to watch. It really was. And you know who Calipari started to remind me of a little bit? Started to remind me a little bit like Mike Tomlin, right? You say John Calipari, great coach. You say Mike Tomlin, great coach. Mike Tomlin has won championship. John Calipari has won championship. But are either closer than where they were a few years ago to where they are now in winning their next one? And the answer is no. And we know Mike Tomlin gets in the postseason and then is out of the postseason, eliminated in the first round. Now, we know what Calipari did last year up against Oakland, but even when he gets a little bit further, he has some bad losses. And you look at what happened last night for a team that was not supposed to be there, but they are there. This is supposed to be their moment. This is a wonderful story. They're the lone double-digit seed remaining in the NCAA tournament in the Sweet 16. They could taste the Elite Eight. And John Calipari, what he's been the last 5 years at Kentucky, popped up in Arkansas. You just can't blow a 16-point lead. With under 5 minutes to go, you can't blow a 13-point lead. He didn't foul up three, which, to be honest, that's not even the one I'm crushing him for. But then in overtime, not taking a timeout, when your team looked like they were a bunch of chickens with their heads cut off, and they had no clue what they were doing, and they almost didn't even get the shot off. I think there was 0.2 seconds, and it just got off. And it didn't go. Like, there's a lot there that if you don't like Coach Cal, and I like Coach Cal, and I usually root for Coach Cal, that you could slam him for. At the end of regulation, at the end of overtime, and just choking away a game when you had victory and you snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. Because that's what they did. And yes, I know people could say, oh, but they weren't supposed to be here. But you were. And you had a 16-point lead. And you got to win those games. And you don't know when you're going to be back. And do I believe that John Calipari, with the way that he could coach and the way that he could recruit, that he could make Arkansas happening and jumping and they could be back in a Sweet 16 in very short order? Yes. But it doesn't mean that they're going to find a way to get to Elite Eight. Doesn't mean that they're going to find a way to get to a Final Four. And it doesn't mean they're going to find their way to a national championship game. And it doesn't mean that they're going to find their way to a championship game. And you never know when you get on one of these runs, which Arkansas was on, what could happen. But that is a miserable, and I mean a miserable end to the season in the fashion that it did go down last night. Let's hear from John Calipari on why he didn't foul up three towards the end of regulation. Cut three.
TB down the stretch came up with rebounds, and, you know, we missed a free throw that made it a three-point game. And now you're like, okay, it's 12 seconds. A little too early to foul. The kid that was 1 for 9 makes it. And it was contested. I mean, sometimes that stuff is, you know, stuff that happens in these games.
That one I don't crush him for. And I know every analyst, once the game ended, like, oh, you got to foul up three, you got to foul up three. That one, for whatever reason it was, when I was watching the moment, it wasn't the first thing that I thought of. But towards the end of the game, I'm sitting there on my couch saying, timeout, 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 timeout. I'm okay letting it go for a little bit. But when no one has any direction, when no one knows what they're doing, you got to call a timeout. And Cal didn't do that. Here is John Calipari. He didn't call a timeout towards the end of overtime.
the last possession there in overtime. Any consideration to calling a timeout there?
Yeah, but in my career, I let that go. Let the guy get to the rim. They're not going to foul you. You know, and with that kind of time, just me. You call a timeout, now you got to worry about what he's doing, how he's playing, the inbound, what are you doing. So I usually let that go. Now, because it ended the way it is, yeah, I wish I would have called a timeout. But 99% of the time, I let that go. Because now I know what they're doing, they know what we're doing. That's why we did it.
You got to call that timeout, though. I'm okay letting it go for a little bit. But there is an obvious moment there when you could have still ran a play and still had time. And the other thing is, he had more time, but towards the end of the first half, he did call a timeout. And it didn't lead to success. But you called it there. And I know the first half is different than the end of the game. But you called in the first half. You didn't call in the second. And that, to me, was just, I thought, indefensible. Especially at the end. When you realize, okay, there's panic, there's chaos. No one knows what they're doing. At least just call the timeout there. Here is John Calipari on his season looking back at it with Arkansas.
For me, this was as rewarding a year, and I feel like crap right now, but this was as rewarding a year as I've had in all my years. Now, I've had teams that were better and finished better and national champions and all that stuff. This was a different reward, It was an experience for me to learn. Like, okay, how do I hold them accountable but not bury them? How do I lift them up yet challenge them? How do I make them uncomfortable so they can learn to be comfortable in those situations? That was an interesting path for me.
Yeah, but it was rewarding for you because people told you that you could no longer be the Cal that we know at Kentucky. So you go to Arkansas and you're having this run, but then towards the end, you know, 2022 losing in the round to 64, 2023, you're losing the round to 32. Last year, losing to Oakland. Like, that Cal that has been there since 2022, let's just say, for the last 3 years, popped back up, and that's why Kentucky no longer wanted you. That's why the fans thought that you had an expiration date. And in that moment, with the 16-point lead gifted to you, you got to win the game. So it kind of justifies and proves why the Kentucky fan was right in saying, okay, it's time to move on from John Calipari. How do you view Coach Calipari right now? 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. We will take a break. When we come on back, we go from Coach Cal to Coach Prime. New deal. What does this mean for the future of the Buffaloes at Colorado? We'll tell you next.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, welcome back in. It is The Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Coach Prime has a new deal. It's a new contract worth $54 million. So a nice little payday for Coach Prime as he signed a five-year, $54 million contract extension with the Buffaloes at Colorado that runs through the 2029 season. And this makes him one of the highest paid coaches in the country. So I think this is the important thing. And this is a very important paragraph on ESPN. If Sanders accepts another coaching job before the end of the contract, his buyout would start at $12 million if he left on or before December 31st of this year of 2025, followed by $10 million in 2026, $6 million in 2027, $4 million in 2028, and $3 million in 2029. He can retire from coaching, though without having to pay damages to the university, as long as he doesn't retire and then return to coaching somewhere else. So I think this is a good day for Colorado. If I'm a Colorado football fan, I do say to myself that I think for a little bit, this puts that never-ending conversation not to rest, but it kind of moves it to the back burner of, hey, is Coach Prime going to be leaving? Now, the way that I'll say this, and I'm not going to say it's impossible that Coach Prime takes another job in college football, because I would imagine a bigger school eventually comes calling and they elect to give him, you know, whatever he wants. But now that he's making, you know, about $10 million a year, and if not more than that, you know how they break it down and all that stuff. His salary will increase to $10 million in 2025, making the highest paid football coach of the Big 12 and among the top 10 highest paid coaches in the country. According to the contract, Sanders will earn another $10 million in 2026, $11 million in 2027, and $11 million in 2028, and then $12 million in 2029. So he's making anywhere from $10 to $12 million. For a college football coach, that's pretty damn good, right? So it's like, how much more could you get from a bigger school? But I think if he's going to leave to go to a bigger school in college, it would be because it's easier for him to get the kids that he wants. Now, Coach Prime, just because of who he is, does not have a problem in getting kids that he wants. Like, for example, you lose Shedeur Sanders, you got a five-star quarterback that just came in Julian Lewis. So he can get the big names. But if you have Coach Prime's brand with, let me just throw out a job that is not going to be open anytime soon, with like the Georgia brand, you know, or the Alabama brand, right? Like marquee jobs in the SEC, or even a lesser job in the SEC. Like, how about Auburn, how Auburn has fallen? And I threw out a few years ago Coach Prime to Auburn. Imagine what Coach Prime could do with the resources of the SEC or even the Big Ten. It's just something to think about. But I, this is the way that I feel about it. And I'm not going to say that he could never go to another college program. But my line of thinking is this deal just once again shows you his commitment to staying at Colorado if he stays in college. And that could change through the years, but at least for the next 2 to 3 years. The only way, though, that I see him leaving Colorado, like in the next 2 to 3 years, would be for the NFL. I don't know if you agree with that statement, Samter, but I think this contract, because a lot of contracts you could say, oh, so what? And then when you look at the buyouts with it starting at $12 million and then getting down as low to $3 million, you know, if you really want him, like let's say if Alabama opened up tomorrow, which we hope it doesn't because we want Kalen DeBoer to do well. Like, can Alabama afford to buy out Coach Prime and then pay Coach Prime? Absolutely. Without a doubt. Easily. So I kind of think with getting this deal done now and it being a lucrative salary for Coach Prime, this takes away, for the immediate future, my line of thinking that Coach Prime is going to be leaving Colorado to go to another college, and that if he's going to leave, it's only going to be to follow Shedeur somewhere and go somewhere in the NFL, would be my guess.
That's a good train of thought. My only potential amendment to that would be the SEC and the Big Ten are kind of running the show.
They're the kings.
So maybe he just decides, you know, I need to be in one of those two conferences in order to compete. The Big 12, as good as it is compared to where I've been, it's just not what the SEC or the Big Ten can offer me as far as the playoffs and winning a championship and how many teams get put in if they do the expansion, all this talk. So that's part of it.
But the other thing is, what is fulfillment for Coach Prime at Colorado?
Right.
Because he was 4-8 the first year. They took over the college football world in September, and they were disastrous down the stretch. And then this past year, they had a very good season. You know, they ended up getting 9 wins. At one point, it looked like they were going to win the Big 12 and they were going to go to the college football playoff. Now, that didn't happen. They had a bad showing up against Kansas, and that put that idea to bed for the rest of the season. But, like, if Coach Prime just makes the college football playoff, or if he just wins the Big 12, like, let's say next year or 2 years from now, does he say, okay, I proved a lot of people wrong. You know, look what I did at Jackson State. Look what I did at Colorado, which was a doormat program. And you know what? I don't really need to do this day in and day out grind of being a college coach and having to deal with all this stuff, because there is that retirement clause in there that, you know, he won't owe anything to the school if he in fact retires and just doesn't go to another school or another program after that. So I think having that, and hey, there's a lot of stipulations and clauses and contracts that end up meaning nothing, but you just have to, from a legal standpoint, put that in there. But I do wonder, there has to be some thought of Coach Prime that says to himself, all right, I know I'm the man at Colorado, right? Like, when I went to go look up their schedule today, I did Coach Prime's football schedule. I didn't even type in Colorado's football schedule. But you had Shedeur there. You had Travis Hunter there. Now they're not there anymore. and you're bringing in your pals Marshall Faulk. You brought in Warren Sapp. So it's like, I do think there is some potential fulfillment there, and there's a desire for Coach Prime to have success at Colorado, even though he loved, right, his sons in Shador, and he calls Travis Hunter one of his sons. But it was awesome to have him there. But then also for him, I'm sure he's motivated, Mike, to have success without those two guys as well at Colorado.
100%. And one of the things that we've said about Colorado is the culture there, and he's developed a culture that is his own. And yeah. I think a lot of
he
young kids...
He is the culture.
He is the culture. And a lot of these kids really are drawn to that. And so would an SEC school, like would an Auburn or an Indiana, would
Why
they
not?
Allow that? Exactly. That's my
point.
Well,
like, put it this way. How is any different what Coach Prime did? I know I'm not saying that you're saying Indiana is going to be open, but Kurt Cignetti basically did what Coach Prime did. He came into the press conference swinging, you know, laying out his resume, you know, talking a big game. That's basically what Coach Prime did as well. So I think they're very similar. And like for a school like Auburn, what else are you doing? You got rid of Gus Malzahn, and you haven't been able to even come close to replacing Gus Malzahn. So if you're not like one of the creme de la creme schools, and you're a small fish in what is a big pond of SEC in the Big Ten, what is there to lose? Like I like Brett Bielema, for example, Illinois. He's done a very good job. But if Brett Bielema retires tomorrow, like, what is there to lose for Illinois? Just like throwing a school like that, you know, for example. But you look at Colorado's schedule this year: Georgia Tech, Delaware, Houston, Wyoming, BYU, TCU, Iowa State, Utah, Arizona, West Virginia, Arizona State, and Kansas State. It's like, all right, Georgia Tech's a fine program. BYU always has a good team with Kalani Sitake. Iowa State, you know, Mack Campbell, I think, is starting to inch back into the circle of trust. Whittingham, you know, this could be it at Utah. You look at Arizona State, that's like a big program now with Levitt and Dillingham, but let's see what's going to happen in replacing Cam.
They'll win by 60.
Yeah. Who, Colorado? I know you didn't mean it that way. Like, Kleiman's done a nice job at Kansas State. But the Big 12, you could walk in, there's like seven teams. And you could give me any one of those seven teams and say that they could win the Big 12 and it wouldn't shock me. So I think Colorado once again is going to be bowl eligible. I think they're once again going to be in the mix to win the Big 12. And I just wonder, like, what does Coach Prime have to check off before he goes, okay, I'm good with this chapter. But for now, I kind of my line of thinking right now, at least for like the next year or two, maybe even three, is that if he's in college, it's going to be in Colorado. But if, let's say, Shador gets drafted by the Giants and then they fire Brian Daboll after 1 year, could I see, you know, Coach Prime trying to get the Giants job? Sure. Or say if Shador goes to Cleveland and let's say they blow out Stefanski after two Coach of the Year awards, could I see him going to Cleveland? Yes. You know, the Raiders, the one spot that it may take some time, but let's be real, Pete Carroll's kind of on borrowed time as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. So, That's where I'm at on this one. That I feel like Coach Prime, at least for 3 years, will stay at Colorado if it's in college. And if he leaves, it's going to be going to the NFL. All right, we'll take a break. Bobby Regan going to join us on the other side. Barstool Sports does a great job. They're college basketball analysts. We always talk to him this time of the year. We'll get his thoughts on last night. Also get his thoughts on the Wildcats, the Kentucky Wildcats, that will play tonight up against Tennessee. Let's get a little update in, though. Here's Zach.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, welcome back in. It is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. We had the Sweet 16 last night. It will continue tonight, and then we'll know what the Elite Eight is for Saturday and Sunday. Let's go out to Barstool's headquarters in Chicago's right now, and we will welcome in Bobby Regan. Does a great job covering college basketball for them. Bobby, appreciate the time as always. How you been?
Good, Zach. How are you, man?
Well, I'm fantastic. So I know that you're a big Kentucky guy. We've talked before about John Calipari. I thought it was time for Kentucky to move on from him, and I thought it was time for Cal to find something else. Really, with what happened at Kentucky the last 3 to 4 years, what you saw last night, is that just justification for wanting the Calipari era to end when it did?
I mean, you can see me. I have a grin on my face because it's not been the last 3 or 4 years. It's been the last 6, 7 years. It's 6 years for sure. Really, that Auburn Elite Eight game in 2019. He is known for what happened last night. That's really why Kentucky fans were ready to run him out of town. It was taking the air out of the ball with about 4 minutes to go instead of running your typical offense, trying to rely on defense and hoping like John L. Davis or DJ Wagner bailed him out last night. And that lead goes from, you know, 15 to 9 to 6 to all of a sudden Texas Tech hits a 3 to go to into overtime. That has played out so many times in the John Calipari storyline. And I agree, like, he shouldn't have fouled at the end of regulation because there is too much time on the clock. They typically say under 6 seconds to foul, 5 seconds really. You know, there was 9 seconds left. That's not the problem. It is the 4 minutes leading up to that. That's the John Calipari experience.
And also, I'm fine with him not taking a timeout originally at the end.
Agreed.
But when you got players running around like they have their heads cut off, like, you got to eventually take a timeout.
Yeah, I'm firmly in the camp of don't call a timeout right away because you don't want the defense set up. You want that scramble where, especially with Calipari teams, you have the athletes, right? Like, you have the quickness, you have the speed to get down the floor and get an open look. But the moment DJ Wagner looked like, coach, when's timeout coming? And they just stood there. Call timeout. It's that simple. And that, again, Kentucky fans have screamed at the last few years. So, yeah, like, look, they made the run to the Sweet 16. I don't understand why people are screaming that this season was a success for John Calipari. They were preseason top 20. They were a 10 seed. They needed a miracle. Not a miracle. They needed a run towards the end of the season to get into the tournament. And then they had two. You know, St. John's was awesome, but that was a perfect matchup for Arkansas. They needed that just to get to the Sweet 16. This was not a successful season. The Sweet 16 helps cover up what I think was a disappointing season. If I told Arkansas fans you are going to finish in the bottom, you know what, quarter of the SEC, the bottom half of the SEC, a losing record in conference, you're going to be a 10 seed. How do they react to that? That's the way to look at it.
Yeah, so them getting to the Sweet 16, I feel like that's what makes people say, okay, it's a successful season. But then also, how they lost, you don't know when you're going to be back, and if you're going to be back, if you're going to change the outcome. You had that game won. Now, I'm not saying that Arkansas is going to the Final Four. They were going to the championship game. But who knows what
would
happen? You're still alive. And you should have won the game, and you didn't.
You're alive going up against Florida with an injured Alex Condon. Like, you have a lot of this stuff kind of leaning your way. But, yeah, that's a John Calipari experience. And I know the Sweet 16. Like, you say Sweet 16, and everyone just assumes, oh, great season. That's a two-game sample size versus the 30 that we saw leading into it. To me, Arkansas was a disappointment. They won the two games. It covers up a lot. But I don't know how people can sit here and say, John Calipari proved Kentucky fans wrong. No, he didn't. He proved exactly why we were kind of ready to move on from him.
Bobby Regan here with us from Barstool Sports. All right, to your Wildcats. If they lose,
then here we go.
If they lose tonight, is it a successful season in your opinion?
100%. Because again, look at the 30 games leading into it. Again, if I told my fellow Kentucky fans before the season, you will have wins over Louisville, Gonzaga, Duke, you sweep Tennessee in the regular season, you beat Florida, you go to Missouri and win, you're a 3 seed in the SEC tournament, you finished with a winning record in a historically great SEC, and you make the Sweet 16. Oh, and by the way, you have 7 games with your entire roster because of injuries. Everyone's like, Mark Pope did a you-know-what type of job, like a heck of a job. And I think that's kind of the general consensus. Now, the downside is you're playing Tennessee in the Sweet 16, a rival, a team that you have won 5 of the last 6 against. So this is the beauty and the worst part about the tournament is it's the ultimate bragging rights, but it's a one-game scenario that dictates the entire season. A win here, a Kentucky win here, I don't know how anyone, even the biggest Kentucky haters, can say it was a bad season. It was a massive success in year one with a roster that was put together late. And again, you know, Jackson Robinson going out for the season, Kirk Creasa going out in the season in early December, Lamont Butler in and out, Andrew Carr missing time. I don't know how anyone can look at what Mark Pope's done from a coaching standpoint and not think it's been an incredible hire.
Where's your confidence that they get the job done tonight?
Look, I love the sport. I cover the sport. I'm a fan at heart, right? And instantly I think worst case scenario. Like, just it's just how my mind thinks. And
I kind of think Tennessee's going to win, you know, and also this is more a national storyline. Everyone's talking about Bruce Pearl, who I love, Kelvin Sampson, right? These guys trying to get their first title. Yeah. What about Rick Barnes? I know he hasn't been to the Final Four since 2003, but he's here once again.
Right. And how about the fact that you look back, Tennessee has lost. They lost to FAU in the Sweet 16. They lost to Purdue last year in the Elite Eight. I think they lost in the round of 32. Yeah, they lost in round of 32. What'd that be, 3 years ago? So they keep progressing one round, and it's like, is this the year they get to the Final Four, which Tennessee has never been? Again, I'm a fan at heart. I love saying Tennessee's never been to a Final Four. I want that to stay true, obviously. But this, as a Kentucky fan, I am worried about positive regression for Tennessee. They did not shoot the ball great against Kentucky in the two games this year. They shot 45 threes in Knoxville. And can we just say this game being played in a football stadium is the dumbest thing in the world? I think, can we all agree on that?
I hate it. I'm going to the Final Four to do shows next week. We're not staying for the games because I hate watching college basketball in a football stadium or in a large stadium.
I get it for the Final Four, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a big event. You can sell the tickets. But the fact that the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight are being played in a football stadium with a curtain and it's not even the entire stadium, and you get these four fan bases, you get three true basketball schools in Houston, Kentucky, and Purdue, two of which are you know, Kentucky is blue as blue blood gets, Purdue, massive success, massive history, Tennessee, a lot of recent history. That's got to be played in a better environment. It just has to be played in a better environment.
Bobby Regan here with us. So Duke at Alabama, that feels like a Final Four game. We're going to see it in the Elite Eight tomorrow. Points, and more points, right, in this one?
I kind of think maybe a little under, because Duke's defense is probably the second best in the country. I think Houston still has the best defense in the country. And the fact that we saw San Diego State 2 years ago beat Alabama by running them off the three-point line, funneling them into the mid-range where they don't want to play, and then San Diego State had an elite shot blocker that year, Nathan Mensah, and you just take away the rim runs. Look at Duke. A lot of big guards, big wings. They can run you off the three-point line. And then you have Malawak, Cooper Flagg. What's the other guy's name? Nwangba, Malik Brown, if he's healthy enough to play. Four guys that are rim protectors. They match up very well. Now, again, we saw Alabama go nuclear last night, a historically great shooting night. That's always a real possibility. But I kind of think Duke's defense is tailor-made to, you know, defend what Nate Oates wants to do.
Yeah, I'm not picking against Duke until they go down, to be clear, in this tournament. When we look at the other ones that still remain that are playing tonight, Auburn and Houston, do you think Houston's losing to Purdue? Do you think Auburn's losing to Michigan? Because I don't.
If one loses, my guess would be Michigan beats Auburn.
Okay, Dusty May.
That Auburn kind of felt like it hit its peak a little early. They struggled down the stretch, obviously. I think they lost three or four, if I remember correctly. They haven't seemed right. And don't get me wrong, they are a great team. But a month ago, people were talking about them as potentially an all-time great team. That ain't the case anymore, right? I think everyone agrees. All Michigan does is win close games. If they hang around, if Auburn does not step on their throats early, how do you not kind of think Michigan just finds another way to win like they have over the last 3 months? Houston, I think, is the best team in the country. They have the defense. What they have this year compared to years past are three guards that shoot the ball so well. I'm not worried about their offense. Emmanuel Sharp, LJ Cryer, Milo Suzan are phenomenal. They might be the best three-guard tandem in the country. And they should just smother Purdue. I am not, and look, I may be dumb, but I just don't see it happening. That's the beauty of saying something like that, because yeah, it's the NCAA tournament. But I think Houston's I said before the tournament, Houston's going to win the national championship. Nothing's persuading me from that right now.
You going Izzo? Or you going Beard tonight?
What an elite coaching matchup. This feels like Izzo, though. This isn't Tom Izzo team. I don't understand how Michigan State is good. Like, I've watched every game, and I'm just like, these guys aren't good outside of Jace Richardson. And I say that in jest. Like, they're not an elite, talented team for a number two seed.
You're going to wind up in their locker room for the next thing you know.
I know, but
video.
Like, but I mean, but
call
they,
Tim
they,
Doyle.
they play, I'm not calling them frauds because they play Tom Izzo basketball.
Yeah.
Right? They don't shoot the ball exceptionally well, but they rebound, they defend. They have that top talent in Jace Richardson, and all the parts fit, which matters. Ole Miss, you know, they did what they did against Iowa State, but they have had a history recently of getting up and then blowing the lead. They did it to Arkansas in the SEC tournament, which took a buzzer beater for them to win. They did it against North Carolina, which they had to hang on to win. I'm not ready to kill a Michigan State team, even if they're struggling shooting, because Ole Miss just kind of has lapses in judgment, and I don't know how you can go against Izzo when this team is just an Izzo team.
I only got 30 seconds left. Is the Barstool office and I like Rico Bosco? Are they rooting for Alabama to fall?
I don't know, man. It's hard to root for Duke. It's hard to root for Duke. That's kind of where everybody
is. It's a big test. It's Duke, Alabama. It's Duke or Rico. I'm a writer, to be clear. I don't want anyone going after me, but geez, it's a big one.
It's content versus Duke, and I'm torn in the middle. I love Rico. I've been with Rico all day, and it's we've talked a lot about the game, but yeah, it's hard to say Duke.
Yeah, Bobby Regan. Riggs, good luck to your Wildcats tonight. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, man. Have a good one.
There you go, Bobby Regan from Barstool Sports, right from their HQ in Chicago, joining us for a few minutes of the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Ryan Konigsberg still to come at 4:20 p.m. Eastern Time. Coach Prime with the extension. We're also doing a little prospect profile with Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter. When we come on back, we'll do a little onside, offside. Coming on back, Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.